everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with the Pocket of Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We have been talking about fathers, yes. Fathers from every level. Fathers as a as Scott Baum called it, the dark hole of the psychic universe. So little we know about dads. We know so much about mothering and nurturing and bringing your children up and all of that stuff, but dads we don't understand very much. So we want to talk more about fathers and get you to understand fathers and your relationship with your father. And to help me with this, one of the most father out people I know, Kent Robert Shaw. Kent, dads are enigmatic. I mean, part of the reason is they're difficult to understand is they tend to be less verbal. They tend to be less emotionally expressive. They tend to be seen as, you know, the person who goes out and works and mom is kind of left to do the child rearing. Children have very little contact with their dads. But dads are going through great emotional things, you know, they may not even know it. From your perspective, what do you see as the greatest challenges that face children in their relationship with their fathers?
Well, I think just like there's been a women's movement in terms of their ability to see themselves as people who can be in the workplace, I think equally in the last 30, 40 years, there's been a men's movement to have men see themselves as being able to do the things at the home, especially as it relates to being a parent, that used to be seen as really only something that women and mothers can do. So I think there has been a shift, and I think the importance of fathers in their relationship to their children in terms of growing self-esteem and support is one of the most important aspects of a father's influence in the development of a child and how they see themselves and how they see the world around them.
I think women, you know, Kent, I think women see themselves as being women, lovers, emotionally attached to their husbands. They get married and I think they feel like, you know, this part of this picture is I'm going to have babies and I'm going to have a home. Part of the picture of being a woman. Mm-hmm. I think men's pictures is not that I'm going to be a father. It's like I'm going to be your husband and we're going to have a home and we will have babies. But I think the perception is very different. I mean, for women, I think the babies become just like equal part of the formula. For men, the babies are, in their own mind, well, the babies are something we'll think about later. We're going to have babies, and it's like we're going to have a car, we're going to have babies.
Right.
And that's quite a difference in perception between people when they get married.
Yeah, I mean, you think about little girls with their dolls at a very early age, getting some kind of validation about having a small child. You know, with the early play of girls with dolls is really mimicking being a nurturing, tender mother. And there really are no boys, you know, really hanging out with dolls in terms of role modeling, that's something that they're going to try to get some early training and early validation that's something they're going to want to do. But fast forward, when a father is a father, and we're talking now with a baby and an infant, a large part of what a father now entails is not just bringing home the payment and the money for the household, but hopefully providing some of the nurturance, the cuddling, the care of a young infant.
So it gets confusing. We'll go back to what young boys play with. Of course, young boys play with cars and toys and rockets and things that are phallic in nature and things that blow up, you know, and things that could affect everybody. And it's like it seems really early. If you look at childhood play, you see that child preparing themselves for adolescence, for their adolescent sexuality. And the whole idea here is, am I going to be seeding out there? Am I going to be out there having babies, but then moving on? It's not having babies and fathering.
Yeah, it's having babies, and certainly before 1960 or 1965, really handing the baton to
you should pardon the expression.
Yeah, handing this aspect of the child rearing to the mother. The mother's really perhaps a feeling like they're the ones that are better at it. They're better trained at it. And again, perhaps men feeling a little bit like fish out of water about how to do it well, how to nurture and be loving and caring and empathic to a small child's needs. It's something that they're not well equipped. They know how to build rockets and shoot rifles and things like that, but not necessarily an empathic connection with a child to help it feel loved and feel the world is a safe place.
And they're supposed to know. They're supposed to know how to do it all. They're supposed to know. They learned from their parents that the way you teach a child is a certain way. They're supposed to know it. They're supposed to know it instinctively. They're not allowed to ask directions. So the man is there kind of trying his best. Now, most men have children around age 28, 29 years old.
Right.
When the man is like early, like maybe 30 years old, they have their first baby. And now he's got a baby, and the baby is born at what age? All babies are born at the same age,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm.
Not me. I was much older. Anyway, you get born, and now you're born, and your father, who is this young man who takes you out to play, by the time you get to adolescence, both as a young girl and as a young man, your father is turning into his 40s. And he's getting to be 40, 45, and there starts to be this growing sense of impotence, prostate problems, tiredness, and a lot of other emotional things start happening to Dad. Dad is changing. Dad, who may have been this firebrand who was going to be the hero for the family, who took you to baseball practice, Dad's changing, and people aren't aware of Dad's changes both hormonally and psychologically, emotionally.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of our patients come in and talk about the father and what the father was like at this point in his life, in his 40s, the middle age years, let's say, between 40 and 60 years old. And yes, I think that has a lot of influence on the growing son and daughter's life. And certainly part of it is whether the father walks in the door with a smile on his face from a job well done and job satisfaction, or Dad's walking in the door, like I'm sure many people's experience, feeling that the world is a jungle, that he's being passed over for promotions, that he's getting mistreated at work, his boss doesn't really respect him, nobody really respects him, and this feeling that he's not living up to his own potential, and perhaps a slightly paranoid feeling that there's some agenda against him at the workplace, has him walk in the door. And certainly those issues about his own insecurities and his own feelings about the outside world being unfair to him, I would argue, then start playing itself out in terms of how he treats his wife, and I guess the focus of this show, how he treats his children once he walks in the door.
So for many of us to perceive, you know, I mean, even as a therapist, I'll ask a patient, what's your father like? And mostly what they're going to describe is what their father is like in the present, or what he was like as an overall general thing. And I think what we have to look at, now that we're learning so much about the human body and mind, we have to talk about what was Dad like at different stages in your life. What was Dad like when you were 10? Did Dad play with you? Now, for young women, to have this phenomenon happen when they get to pubescence. I remember I asked a woman earlier today, when you got your period, did you tell your father? And she was shocked. She said, of course girls don't tell their fathers when they get their period. Of course, it's such a, you know, how could you tell your father you got your period? Well, in certain relationships, I would imagine you're okay to tell your father, oh, I got my period, tell your mother I got my period. It's not that big a deal. But for the woman who thinks that it's a horror to tell your father that you got your period and you have to hide it, and your mother and you can collude to hide your sexuality, becomes kind of a dynamic in a relationship with Dad. Because in many women sense, and they sense it properly, that Dad, the minute that they turn from being a girl into a young woman, is going to reject them. He's going to be afraid of his own sexuality. He's going to see her breast developing. He's going to take her off his knee and say, no, you can't do that anymore, because he's afraid of himself. And for many women at age 12, you know, 11, 12, 13, this is a big loss. I lost my father when I became a woman. And for many women, they reject their own womanhood because of it.
Yeah, I think that that period, whether it's a very complicated, transaction about what's going on with the father and his own concerns about children and adolescent sexuality, and yes, even coming from the mother, coming from the daughter as well, which is perhaps her own unconscious or barely realized feelings about her, perhaps sexual feelings as it relates even to the father. So that I think that many a 10-year-old girl is very happy to be on dad's knee, but all of a sudden at 12 or 13, there's an uncomfortableness. And where is that uncomfortableness coming from? Is it coming from dad is now uncomfortable? Or is it coming from the fact that the girl is uncomfortable? I would think, you know, boys are the same way. Certainly my experience is the same way, is the same kind of hug to my mom at 10 years old. At 13, I'm starting to feel a little skeevy about it. You know, I'm like, you know, this is, I don't know what about it I don't like, but just, stay at arm's length there, mom. And, we can wave at each other. So something sad can happen in terms of just the wish to cuddle and to be nurturing and to be affectionate because of some of these unconscious kind of sexual tensions that may arise. And hopefully the parents are able to be quite understanding and not feel a kind of rejection from their 12 or 13-year-old son or daughter when they may appropriately go through a period of, needing their own space because they're slightly uncomfortable. They may overcome that, as I have personally with my mother or whatever, but, you know, this is just an unusual time where things are confusing, all these hormones going through boys and girls at that time.
My guest is Dr. Kent Robert Shaw, psychiatrist, and on staff here at the DeMille Center, works with us. And Kent is talking about what happens in the discomfort. I think, Kent, we may have something built into our DNA that at a certain age puts out a certain kind of, maybe some kind of olfactory sense that says, you're not just, don't get that close anymore. It doesn't smell good. Because that feeling of being the boy who feels this kind of, ooh, this doesn't feel anymore. It's almost like it's a smell, even though it's not a smell. It's like something inside of you says, at a certain point, we're going to push you away chemically from your parents. It's the way we're going to get you to mature. We're going to get you off your mama's lap or off your dad's lap. Of course, many people never do. And many boys stay in their mother's laps forever.
Yeah. To a fault, I think.
Yeah, it's the only place I feel safe.
Yeah, I think that gradual between 12 and 18 pulling away from mom and dad is really one of the aspects of adolescence, to go from a dependent 11-year-old to somebody at 18 can now go off to college or go off to school independently. And that transition from a little child at 11 who's completely dependent and identifies themselves as mommy or daddy's son or daughter to somebody who has a sense of their own identity and somebody who is very comfortable at 11 or 12 maybe to have you call the doctor for me and tie my shoes and could you please, do something for me. At 18, you want them to be independent. And that struggle within the child of wanting to be taken care of and wanting to be independent is something we see in adults as well. That struggle that it feels nice to be taken care of and it feels regressively nice to be dependent and have someone take care of you, but it also feels very grown up and sort of mature to be able to take care of myself.
And one of the advantages of going to get your first apartment is leaving it a mess. You leave it a mess and you walk out the door and you say, but it's my mess. I don't have to clean it up. It's up to me. And then eventually you learn, no, I think I'll clean it up for me, not because I'm supposed to. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. We're talking about the fatherhood and father-child relationships. We're talking about a lot of the changes that take place both in the adolescent as they grow and as they, in the child and their bonding with their fathers. You know, it was Freud's formulation that a child needs to bond at first with the mother, but the male child needs to bond with the father. In order to do that, he has to get off mama's lap. For many young boys, they get off mama's lap and they look around and dad's nowhere to be seen. Dad is an absent father. He's withdrawn, he's out, he's busy, he's working. And there they are, ready to get off mom's lap. And mom could help them get off their lap anyway. Mom could say, it's all right, son, you're on your own. You'll find your own way of getting through this. But very often, moms, when they have a missing dad around, when they have a father who's not connected to them, they say to the kid, well, come on back in here and sit for a little while longer. And they will weave a web around the boy, and the boy will find he is totally attached to mom, and he can't get away. And that lasts and lasts and lasts and becomes a program. And, you know, very often, as I've heard in so many men's lives who have been unable to have relationship with women, there's some kind of a program in their mind says, the only woman you'll ever love is me, mother. And it's the only woman they'll ever allow themselves to love. Many of them turn to loving men.
Right.
You know, instead, because they're not betraying mom by doing so.
Yeah, I think the father has a very important role in terms of allowing the sons in particular to provide a place of role model as well as love and nurturance for the son, so the son can effectively pull away from mom and allow, you know, themselves to be, see themselves as independent. And obviously, at teenage years, model with the son that you're really going to want to find female love, not with mom, obviously, but with girls in school, and so that you're going to, the father will encourage a pulling away from mom, not a disrespect of mom, but a gentle, you know, pulling away with the healthy idea that you need to now start forming relationships with women your own age, romantic relationships, and it's okay to cut that umbilical cord. So the father is an essential part of that. And if the father is either tied up at work and overly concerned about work issues, then the father is not really mentally available to give the time and energy that the father should. Now, you know, my work with addictions, I see in New York City in particular, a lot of what I would call work addiction, where the father is just very caught up in a sense of self-esteem and a sense of self-worth through work to the detriment of love, love of wife, love of children, love of friends. There's a pseudo family at work. There are pseudo friendships at work, but it's not the more complicated and perhaps difficult world of coming home from work and just mixing it up with your wife and your kids and a couple of buddies or female friends.
Part of what I think happens is in today's world, the mother, being the more sensitive one, will try to encourage the father to have a relationship with his child, including his son. Because today there are so many prohibitions about fathers with their daughters that dads are being real careful. I mean, the accusations are real easy, and the sloppiness is real easy. Dad could be, and has always been, felt the tendency to do whatever he felt like doing with his daughters, and they overreached their boundaries many times. But now mom is the conscious one, and you have a conscious mom who's a therapeutically sound mother, and she sees a baby having a relationship with his father. Doesn't she, the mom, want to be able to say to her husband, listen, be more sensitive with your son. Just don't show him Playboy magazine. Don't take him out to these bars. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, just don't play hard sports. You know, show him the advantage of meditating. And now the moms, and I've seen this all over in the New Age world and in the therapeutic world, the moms want to guide the relationship between the father and the son. What do you think, Kent? What do you think needs to be done in that case?
Well, you know, I think that at the end of the day that mothers and daughters probably have their own private world, female world, that is not, the boys aren't allowed in that club. And I would think similarly that boy, fathers and sons have their own private little world that, again, the sisters and the mom shouldn't be allowed into the world. And it's sort of an initiation into, like, all primitive cultures in the world, which, you know, at 12 or 13, many cultures in Africa and Australia and American Indian would have a ritualization that you're coming away from mom and you're now with the boys. And yeah, boys can be a little, you know, a little friskier. They can be a little bit more free to tell slightly off-color jokes and the like. And maybe that's an important part of male identity. That's okay. It's okay for fathers and sons to have a little private joke or a little private world. And yes, the mothers aren't able to come into that club, just the way fathers don't really know what's going on in the shopping mall. It's okay that the girls are having their girl talk and the boys are having their boy talk.
You run into a little trouble with that when the guys, son and father, start having secrets from mom. You know, don't tell your mom and don't tell your dad stuff. That kind of division happens all the time, that kind of triangulation with children and parents. And fathers may have a tendency to do that, maybe even more than moms, I don't know. But this idea of trying to get a child to keep a secret from their other, from the other parent, that sounds so divisive and incisive.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking about triangulation and we're talking about a 50% divorce rate, we're really getting, I think, at the heart of one of the major problems, which is that when a marriage is starting to go sour, what is the tendency within the mother and father to start looking emotionally towards their children for the love and the respect and nurturance that they're no longer feeling they're getting from their spouse? And so this happens all the time, what I and others have called emotional incest. And yes, one of the problems sometimes that fathers have is that the mother is starting to prefer one of the sons to the father, not in a sexual way, obviously, but the father notices that there's a big smile on mom's face when there's an interaction with the oldest son or something, that, you know, there's big grins, big hello, proud, and then I get, you know, criticism, and I don't elicit that twinkle anymore. We used to when we were, you know, first dating and the first year we were married or something, but I don't get that love anymore. My son gets that love, and now we're at what is called the reverse Oedipal complex, which is not the son's rivalry with the father, but the father who's recognizing, I'm losing this battle. My wife prefers my son to me. And trust me, with 100% of the divorces that I've run into, it's correct. It's not a misperception. The father correctly sees that the wife is, you know, quite attached to the son, and there becomes unfairly to the child a rivalry with the father, as if the father's blaming the kid for being so cute or something, you know, like, what's the kid's crime? He's just trying to get father love and mother love. It's really the issue between the parents, that the mother shouldn't be showing preferential treatment for the children. That's setting the father up to feel jealous and to cause a conflict that shouldn't be there between father and son.
You know, part of that, I think, Kent, and just to watch both sides, and I think you're saying something very important. I wish it could be really heard. But part of that is, you know, the fathers initially with their wives, and their wives are bringing up the children, they distance themselves. And they want to take that wife for granted. They want to be able to say, well, you know, you're home and you're only a wife. And I don't even see you as a sexual object anymore. I see you as kind of a person who cleans the house and fixes the house, and you take care of the baby. Suddenly, when that young man grows up, and he sees that she does twinkle, you know, now she stopped twinkling because you, the father, stopped twinkling her. You know what I mean? You stopped your own twinkles when you came home. So you thought you could get away with it, but, you know, it's as if there was a room, a boarder in the house, and somebody was renting a space, and he happened to be a young college student, and suddenly your wife started dressing up to make dinner. Right. You know, you would say to yourself, ooh, something's going on here. Well, the men may think this is okay to do, this is the way you treat your wife, and that's perfectly all right, and they don't see that they're opening the door for their son to take their place, in a way, in their mother's gleam, in their mother's glint, their mother's eyes.
And sometimes the children will actually not only just become the object, but will be held hostage. You know, there's a hostage taking, not in Lebanon and Israel, but there's a hostage taken in the household where the mother will then start bad-mouthing the father to the son or daughter, so that now there's even beyond just a close relationship, now there's a parental generational breakdown of boundary, that I'm now going to complain to you about your father, to A, have you closer to me, B, to join sides with me to help maybe change your father, because maybe if it's coming from the two of us, these complaints, it'll work. And again, all that often happens is the son starts somewhat, I don't know, brainwashed is a strong word, but to feel close to mom. And if feeling close to mom means I like Sonny Rollins and I like to all these things about mom, then I understand that to get mom to be happy with me is to nod my head yes, that dad's a loser. You know, that as a way to feel close to mom, I start agreeing with things about dad. And what you just implied is that the father's, if they've been kind of in a traditional role of bringing home the bacon and been distant, they're not there to form their own independent relationships with their children. So, yes, there's not a whole lot of time and energy spent with the child. So it's fairly easy for the mother to pull the child away and perhaps to communicate things that would suggest, I'm disappointed with your father. You must be as well.
Mom listening to Sonny Rollins?
Yeah, mom's listening to
Sonny. No, mom's listening to Ahmed Jamal.
All of the above. And I think one of the things I see also, a lot of fathers wanting to connect with their adolescent or maybe late adolescent son or daughter, but it is all of the Beatles, you know, the amount of love you get is the amount of love you give, you know, and you reap what you sow, which is, yes, if the mother's been going to soccer practice and spending time in their room talking to them about their life and their feelings and their emotions. I saw a study one time that suggested that something like 50% of fathers don't know the names of their child's best friends. So that just means that they're uninterested in the emotional world of their children. What are they interested in? They're interested in achievement. What kind of grades are you getting? How did you do in soccer camp today, Jill? It's all sort of achievement-oriented. And again, mothers, the ones that are attuned to, yes, achievement, but also what's your world like emotionally?
I ran into a man recently who brings his laundry home to his mother's house to get it washed. When I asked him, why do you bring your mother home to it, he said, well, she seems to be able to do more with my wash than any place I send my wash. I said, is there any particular item? And he said to me, yeah. He said, my athletic supporters. He said, when I wear those out to a game or something, nobody can get them as white as my mother can. And I just said, there's going to be trouble here.
Yeah, trouble in Dodge City.
Trouble in Dodge City. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robert Shore. We're going to continue talking about this. But I don't know, Kent. You know, let's go to the young father, Sonny Rollins. Let's go to how young can Sonny Rollins be? And how 25 years old, 26 years old,
he's
was playing some music and he was already a master. And it was not only Sonny Rollins, but, you know, you might recognize the trumpet that goes along with this. So we're going to play you a piece of music that Kent and I share in our own masculine way. And this is Armand DeMille with you. We'll be back with you in a short bit, right after which we will continue our discussion.
Thank you.
Just continue and continue and continue. That's Veered Blues, V-I-E-R-D. Veered Blues is only would have been said in the 50s. What do you think, Kent? What date?
53, 54, something like that.
1953, 54. That
was just a chilling.
Like a villain? Yeah. Anyway, we can leave it on. We can't leave it on because I've got somebody here who's as much an addict as I am when it comes to jazz. Thanks for bringing that over.
You're welcome.
What do you like about it?
You know, the thing about Sonny is, and Miles, I gave away who it is just understated. Talk about less is more, and they just you know, leave pauses in their phrasing that just implies, you know, the notes in between. It's very subtle, beautiful stuff.
What two album set is that from, in case anybody wants to get it? Or five album set, actually.
It's from the Complete Prestige Recordings of Sonny Rollins.
The Complete Prestige Recordings of Sonny Rollins. This is Armand DeMille with Kent Robert Shore. Kent Robert Shore is a psychiatrist and a jazz guy. So, Kent, you're going to listen to rock and roll, huh?
I love rock and roll, for those of you in the listening audience
who love rock and roll as well, and so do I. I love music. So now, what about androgen? How does androgen play a role in this men? Because, you know, here's what happens to dads. Dads, in effect, seem to get depressed. You know, it's like if you could think of most fathers, they say, oh, I have a good relationship with my father, but he's kind of really quiet now, and he's really toned down. Now, do you think that dads get depressed after a certain period of time? And what will trigger that depression?
Yeah, I can't imagine the number of people in the audience that are in their 20s to 40s who, when they call up their parents, dad has a monosyllabic answer, or, you know, kind of gruffs or something, and mom, you know, may have her stuff, but she's got all the juice, all the energy, all the conversation and everything, and dad's doesn't have much to say, or doesn't, it's unclear for many people. That's unclear what their fathers are up to later in life. And, I think this starts in middle age. And I think it's, as you're implying, Armand, a combination of something, physical that's going on with their hormonal changes, a kind of male menopause, which doesn't get enough attention because it doesn't have the dramatic, symptoms of the female menopause. So there's something endocrinological with testosterone, which is androgen, the same chemical. And then, as we were implying before, we could talk about something, profoundly psychological going on, particularly if there's a real, basis of self-esteem and self-worth and happiness on a sort of grandiose, on a narcissistic sense of one's own self-importance. So those two things are like a perfect storm that happens in middle age, of the losing one's mojo with the testosterone dropping, and then reality rearing its ugly head that you're not the superstar that you thought you were going to be.
Well, when that happens, and the men get depressed, I mean, I certainly hear from them a great deal, but then, you know, they look at themselves, and so often men will blame themselves. They'll look at their lives and they'll say, I don't feel connected to anybody. I don't feel connected to my wife. My wife is connected to the baby. You know, I don't feel connected to my job. My job just turned out, instead of being the dream job, it just turned out to be a job. I'm afraid to leave it. I'm biding my time until I retire, right? And it's kind of always an interesting word to me, retire, which means, you know, until I get the tires and strip off the rubber and put on new tires. And I'm going to retire, but even then, what do I look forward to? I look forward to staying at home where I don't feel good. So that's what retirement is. So then they're going to put me out to pasture, and then they feel that it's at their own fault. It's like, well, I made the wrong choices. I did the wrong things. I could have bought Apple stock when it was selling at $5 a share. You know, I could have done right by my family, and I didn't do right for my family. I disappointed my wife. I disappointed my children. And they remind me. And wife says, you know, if you only earned a little more money, or if only you were home a little more often, if you only took a more active role, if only, if only, if only. And so now here I am, furious with myself, furious with the world, and I have no place to put that, and I turn it on myself, so I'll go get a drink. And I'll have a drink, and I'll calm down, and I won't think about it too often, and I'll go to sleep a little extra early, because I just don't know what to do. Now, at this point, the men do not call for help. It usually takes the intervention of a loving wife or a child to say, Dad, you know, I think you're depressed. I want to bring you for help. Because they won't see either chemically that they're depressed or psychologically they're depressed, and that they could find help in one of many different ways. It could be, you know, just if you're the child, I think at some point you turn around to your father and you look at your dad and you say, hey, you know, my dad's depressed. Let me take him out. Let me take care of him. Let me start giving something to my dad. You know, let me take my dad to the gym with me and have him work out a little bit. Let me show him a little bit of life. But by then it's usually too late. The children have no interest in doing that. Dad's a complainer. Dad talks with negativity. And the child believes it. I go out with my father, and all he does is complain. He's just an old bean, you know. There's no way of changing him. Meanwhile, if you're a loving child, or if you're a child who can step back away from it and see this going on with your father, get help for your father. Take him out. Go someplace with him. Ignore his terrible words for the time being. Get him out running a track a couple of times, or playing a little basketball like he did when he was a kid, and you'll find that maybe his negativity will disappear. And if that doesn't work, get him some help.
Yeah, I mean, the quote, children begin by loving their parents, then they judge them. Rarely, if ever, do they forgive them. And in that is a certain understanding that this material in the last 20 years by Armand and professionals about psychological wellness and getting connected with one's emotions may not have been available. To many of you who are 20, 30 years old, your parents who are 50, 60, 70, the world was not such that people were valued for connecting to their emotional world and talking about their emotions. That was a world of John Wayne and Clint Eastwood, where emotions were considered feminine and weak and only got in the way with what men need to do, which is to have action steps. So that it does show a tremendous amount of forgiveness and compassion in one's 20s and 30s to cut Dad a little slack and say he tried the best he could, given my grandfather and the role modeling my father had with my grandfather. But that suggests compassion, understanding, and forgiveness. That's not so easy when you just want to focus in on the fact that I didn't get enough of love from my father, so I'm bitter. I'm not in a place of compassion. I'm in a place of he still owes me.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, I wonder if there's a way of cutting through. Now, do you see many, what percentage of your clientele that you see? I guess you would see them mostly around addiction or alcohol problems. That one, they're the men in their 40s or 50s?
Yeah, certainly. And as I mentioned, work addiction and other kinds of addictions as well. But yes, a lot of people, a lot of men in their 40s and 50s. And as we're implying, again, they're so cut off emotionally that they're not even connected to the feeling of depression. They're just connected perhaps with a somatic complaint of tired or I feel unsatisfied. They're not really connected with blue and sad and insecure, which may be the true feelings that are underneath this boulder on their shoulder at 45 or 50. They're just aware that they feel down, they feel tired, they feel unhappy. And yes, they don't turn to Dr. Robert Shaw or they don't turn to friends. They turn to Johnny Walker and they find that magic liquid magically makes them feel a little lighter, a little bit more relaxed, and all the worries and all the feelings that I didn't achieve enough magically disappear.
You know, the father's need, a man's need for his own father when he becomes a father, you know, you get to be 45, 50 years old, maybe your dad died, the bar becomes quite an amazing place because you go there and you feel good with other men around, you know, and you get this kind of bonding that takes place. And it's like, it's such reinforcement to be at a bar where you could be hanging out with other guys, especially if it's a cultural bar, like if it's an Irish bar and you're Irish, you feel family again. You feel alive again during that time. And it's little wonder that there's such an episode, such a high number of episodes of alcoholism forming at that stage of life, you know? I mean, you just, in effect, of course, what you're doing is you're making your body, you're preparing your body for formaldehyde. You know, you're just filling it with enough alcohol that you just become numb all over. But it's pretty tough. Do they normally respond to low-level antidepressants? Do you generally find a fast response to that?
Yeah, I think that antidepressants for a lot of these men are very helpful. But again, to overcome that stigma, again, Mike Wallace and other notable people in our society have come forward and been able to tell the world, you know, I'm male and I suffer from depression, and there's nothing shameful about that. It's not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign that there's something wrong with me, that there may be, again, something biological going on in my genetics. And yes, that many men, if they can get to the point of acknowledging they're depressed, they will then be able to be on an antidepressant and will, at least at 50-60%, will get a little bit of a boost with the antidepressant.
Very often when men get older, they run into some physical changes and some people wind up in prolonged pain. What's the latest research on living with prolonged pain and depression?
Well, you know, getting to what I said before about the interaction between people who are cut off with their emotions, I feel that men and women sometimes will also you know, start manifesting their feelings of depression because they're, again, disconnected to their emotion, it's more comfortable to say, A, I'm tired, or B, I don't feel well. I don't feel well physically. It's very hard to connect with I don't feel well emotionally. That's a little bit more dangerous for people. It's much easier for them to say I don't feel well physically. And so I think that a lot of pain syndromes in men and women as they get older are psychosomatic in origin, psychogenic in origin. It's a manifestation that there's some emotional pain going on that they're not connected with. And so the pain becomes an outlet for their need to get help and to get attention. But sadly, when you go to doctors and you say, my stomach's hurting, my back's hurting, my head's hurting, they won't say, oh, is it because your kids hate you and the fact that you got passed over for that chairmanship of the Department of Psychiatry at Cornell? That's not what they're going to say. They're going to say, oh, you have this syndrome. You have DeMille syndrome, and here's a pill to help you out. And they're not necessarily going to be helpful to get you refocused on the belief that your emotions, your anxiety, and your depression are breaking through in terms of physical symptoms.
So I think what you're saying, Kent, is that dad's got a poor break here, that in many ways fathers are kind of they get the short end of the stick at the end because they're stuck with this belief, this numbness that they have. It almost feels like it's natural. It almost feels like I'm getting ready to walk out on the ice. You know, it's like they don't have the wherewithal to ask for help. They consider it not masculine to see themselves as having emotional problems. They don't go for help. And, of course, everybody around them is kind of warded off by the complaints and all the other things that, you know, the person has. You know, you got a parent that spends their lives complaining. At one point, you can learn to ignore the complaints. It's a very tough thing to do. But see the complaining as somebody who's moaning, you know, and they're just moaning because their bones hurt. And then if you can, go in there and see if you could bring them to some kind of help. Now, I've learned a couple of tricks that young people have done because they're concerned about their parents. And one of the tricks that they've done is they make believe they need family therapy. They say to their parents, you know, I'm having emotional problems and my therapist says I have to bring you along because I can't deal with my problems without you coming in. And at least this way, the parent gets a chance and the father gets a chance to talk to a mental health professional who may be able to look at them and say, you know, maybe you should see me alone one time, and maybe I could give you a hand with this. Because it's such a pity that at some advanced age, women, I think, have such a rejuvenation over and over again in living through their children and living, you know, having this freedom, this kind of changes that go through them, and they don't end it. Even when they become grandmothers, they have all kinds of great life starting all over again. But I think the men are kind of stuck.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes you'll have a man who, 50, 60, maybe will be comfortable enough, and dare I say comfortable enough with himself, with their masculinity, because I think we're going away from something very powerful, that when you're 15, 16 years old, and you're a boy, and you want to connect with somebody about something's hurting me, or something emotionally is upsetting me, in our society, even in 2006, I think it's seen as something faggy. It's seen as something feminine. If you're a young adolescent and you aren't handling everything and coping totally well, and something, some human emotion of pain, of loss, of sadness, is something going on. The only male emotion at 16 and, dare I say, 56 that many men are able to show is anger. You know, my grandparent dies at 16, I punch a wall. I show the anger. It's not okay for me to show the sadness and the loss. And trust me, there are many men out there who are depressed and who show that emotion of anger because that's a safe emotion for men to show. It's not a feminine one and it's not a vulnerable one. And again, a lot of people need to learn that they can connect with their emotional world and hopefully with people they feel safe and trusting with, and it's okay. and it's okay to connect at that level. The men at the bars, I find, it takes a few drinks for them to feel comfortable with their emotions the way 15-year-old girls are and 25-year-old women are to a stranger at Duane Reade. They can talk about their emotions to somebody they barely know better than a lot of men to some guy who's sitting next to me at my job for 2 years because it scares me. My emotional world frightens me.
Thank you, Kent. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. For the last three programs, we have talked about fathers and the effect of your relationship with your father and your father's relationship with you. We are going to be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., and we will continue with this remarkable stuff. In fact, we'll be taking your calls tomorrow as well. I guess maybe best way to sign it out, you know, Kent, is a little more Sonny Rollins. Why not? Why not?
Can't go Sonny, fathers and Sonnies.
Fathers and Sonnies.
Father knows best.
Yeah, we'll be back with you tomorrow, my friends, at 1 o'clock. If you want to get a copy of today's program, you could hear it on thepositivemind.com or WBAI.org. On the Positive Mind or WBAI.org, either one, go to either one. And if you want to contact me, it's Armand@brainlink.com. And the same with Kent Robert Shaw. You could write to me and I'll forward it on to Kent Robert Shaw.
New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.